So imagine you're doing like 65 on the Cross County Parkway.
Right, just a normal Tuesday.
Exactly. You're thinking about dinner, maybe half listening to the radio, just trying to get home. And then in, I mean, a tenth of a second, brake lights flash, metal crumples, and suddenly you are the center of a screeching six-car pileup.
It's terrifying just to think about.
It really is. You haven't even had time to fully process the airbag deploying, and your routine commute has already become this completely life-altering event.
Well, the physical trauma of an impact like that is obvious, right? It's immediate. But what people rarely anticipate in those first few disorienting seconds is the secondary shock.
Yeah, the legal shock.
Exactly. You haven't just been in an accident. You've just been forcibly plunged into this incredibly complex, high-stakes legal and financial machine.
And untangling that machine is our mission for this deep dive. We're going to break down the anatomy of complex, multi-vehicle accidents, specifically in the New York City and Westchester County areas.
It's a very unique area for this.
Very. We are using case files, litigation overviews, and source material from the law offices of Norman Gershon to understand how these crashes become an absolute legal maze.
Right. We're looking at all those invisible traps that are just waiting for you the moment the dust settles.
Because the specific type of legal representation you have, it literally dictates whether you recover or just get completely steamrolled by the system.
Because, I mean, a multi-car collision is fundamentally a different beast than, you know, a two-car fender bender. The complexity doesn't just double, it scales exponentially with every single bumper involved.
It's sort of like untangling a massive knot of old computer cables in your basement. You pull on one wire thinking you're making progress, and it just tightens a knot somewhere else entirely.
That is a great analogy.
Except here, instead of cables, you're untangling twisted metal, conflicting dash cam footage, and like half a dozen different insurance companies.
And they're all instantly pointing fingers at each other to protect their profit margins.
Yeah, exactly. So to really unravel that knot, the source points out we have to look at the environment where it was tied. The physical geography of where these crashes happen dictates so much of the ensuing legal chaos.
Oh, absolutely. Anyone driving in Westchester County knows it operates as this high-pressure, heavily-traveled vascular system.
It's packed.
It really is. You have these dense suburban communities, White Plains, Yonkers, Mount Vernon, New Rochelle, Scarsdale, and they are all feeding directly into the absolute density of New York City and Connecticut.
And the parkway designs themselves are a huge factor here. I mean, these aren't modern, wide-open interstates in the middle of nowhere.
Not at all.
You've got I-287 cutting east-west right through central Westchester. You have the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Cross County Parkway, connecting Yonkers over to the Bronx River Parkway, the Sawmill I-95.
And they are packed with tricky merging lanes, incredibly short on-ramps.
Those on-ramps are terrifying.
Right. You have limited sight distances around curves and just constant sudden congestion.
Then you add the human element of, like, cross-jurisdictional commuters.
Yes. A single collision on the Sawmill might involve a local from White Plains, a commuter passing through from Queens, and maybe a commercial delivery truck based out of Connecticut.
Wow. Yeah. So the second those vehicles collide, you are mixing out-of-state commercial policies, local municipal laws, and multiple county jurisdictions into one single highly volatile event.
It's a jurisdictional nightmare.
So let's talk about the actual physics and mechanics of that chain reaction, because that's where the finger pointing really starts.
Oh, definitely.
Say you're on the Cross County, traffic suddenly stops, and you get rear-ended so hard you're pushed into the car in front of you.
Right, creating multiple points of contact.
Yeah. So does the blame just fall squarely on the first driver who started the whole domino effect?
You'd think so, but it rarely works out that cleanly. New York operates under what's called a pure comparative negligence system.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means fault isn't an all-or-nothing game. It's more like a pie that can be sliced up into percentages.
Like 60% your fault, 40% mine.
Exactly. Sure, the driver who started the chain reaction is likely holding the biggest slice of the blame. But forensic accident reconstruction teams are going to look at everyone.
Wait, everyone involved?
Everyone. They'll ask, was the car in the middle tailgating the car in front of them before the initial impact?
Ah, I see.
Because if so, they might be assigned 10 or 20% of the fault. And that directly reduces the compensation they can recover. They'll look at, you know, did someone have a brake light out? Were the roads wet, which changes the expected stopping distance?
So every single impact point is treated as its own micro investigation.
Precisely. They are pulling electronic data recorders, The black boxes in modern cars and commercial trucks.
Wow, I didn't even realize normal cars had those.
Oh yeah, most do now. And they check exactly when brakes were applied, the angle of the steering wheel, the speed of impact. They're out there doing skid mark analysis to determine the point of impact versus the point of rest.
It becomes a massive forensic accounting of kinetic energy.
That's a great way to put it. It really is.
Which explains why the immediate aftermath is so treacherous. After you're sitting there with your ears ringing, surrounded by deployed airbags, and a clock has already started on your physical and financial recovery.
And you probably don't even realize it.
Exactly. The source material outlines specific actions you have to take, and the first one is overcoming the physical adrenaline. Because, well, adrenaline is a liar.
It really is a liar.
Right.
You might feel totally fine in the moment, but that shock completely masks serious trauma.
Yeah, the case studies mention this constantly.
Right. When you are hit from behind and then pushed forward, your cervical spine undergoes a violent whiplash effect. Micro tears in soft tissue, herniated discs in the lumbar spine, or even traumatic brain injuries from the concussive force.
And those don't show up right away.
Exactly. They often don't present symptoms until the next morning or even days later.
So if you just exchange info and drive home,
You are handing the defense a massive gift. If you don't seek immediate medical evaluation, months later when you need, like, a spinal fusion, their lawyers will argue that because you didn't go to the ER, you must have injured your back lifting a box in your garage a week later.
that is so cynical, but it makes total sense legally. You also have to deal with the strict reporting laws. Like in New York, if there is death, injury, or property damage over $1,000, it has to be reported to the police.
Yes, and a DMV crash report has to be filed within 10 days.
And let's be real, $1,000 in property damage is basically what, a scratched bumper and a cracked headlight assembly these days.
Pretty much. Getting a car towed might cost that much alone, so you essentially have to report everything.
Right. And while you're waiting for the police, if you're physically able and it's safe to do so, the source says you have to become your own investigator.
Obviously, don't wander into highway traffic.
No, definitely not. But the police report is often just an officer summarizing conflicting stories after the fact, right?
Yeah, they weren't there to see it happen. You need objective reality. You need to photograph the vehicle damage from multiple angles, get the skid marks, the debris field, document the weather conditions, look around for commercial businesses or traffic cams that might have caught the whole thing.
The source also heavily stresses finding independent witnesses immediately. Not the people in the crash who have a vested interest, but, the person waiting at the bus stop or the driver in the next lane who pulled over.
You have to get their contact information right then, because once they drive away, they are gone forever.
But this actually leads to the part of the source material I really struggled with. It strongly cautions against speaking with insurance companies.
It does.
Specifically, it warns against giving any recorded statements before consulting an attorney. And I have to push back on this a bit. Wait a minute, I pay my auto insurance premiums every single month. Why am I treating my own insurance company like an adversary who's trying to trick me?
It's a fair question, but it comes down to understanding the fundamental business model of the insurance industry. Yes, you are their customer, but their primary fiduciary duty is to their shareholders.
Right.
Their goal is to evaluate, process, and resolve claims while minimizing their financial exposure. So when there are six cars involved and complex injuries requiring hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical care, their risk management protocols kick in immediately.
So they aren't looking for the truth, they're looking for liability mitigation.
Precisely. Many large insurers use algorithmic software programs to calculate claim values, and these programs rely on specific data points inputted by the adjuster.
Okay, so how does the recorded statement hurt you?
Well, when an adjuster calls you for a recorded statement a day after the crash, they sound incredibly friendly, very empathetic. They'll ask, "Hey, how are you feeling today?"
And you naturally just say, "Oh, I'm okay, just a little stiff."
Exactly. And that gets logged. Later, when an MRI reveals you need surgery for a herniated disc, they will pull that recorded statement and use your own polite conversational words against you.
Wow.
They'll argue that your injuries weren't severe at the time of the crash because you said you were fine on tape.
That is wild. Saying something harmless like, "I'm okay today," is weaponized into the victim admitted on tape they were unharmed.
It happens all the time.
So you've survived the crash, you've gathered the evidence, you've known enough to keep quiet with the adjusters. But behind the scenes, there is this invisible legal minefield waiting for you regarding deadlines.
The deadlines are brutal.
Normally, in New York, you have a 3-year statute of limitations to file a lawsuit for a car accident. I look at that like a nice big 3-year hourglass. The sand is draining, but you have time to get your surgery, see how you heal, build a case. But the source highlights a massive, terrifying exception.
Right, the municipal trapdoor.
Exactly. If you accidentally get hit by a city bus, or a municipal sanitation truck, or a county maintenance vehicle instead of, you know, a private Honda, someone suddenly flips that hourglass upside down and the sand drains at warp speed.
It's a huge difference. When a government entity is involved, like the Westchester County Beeline Bus System or an MTA vehicle, that standard 3-year rule just goes out the window.
You are suddenly dealing with strict notice of claim requirements.
Very strict. In many of these cases, you have exactly 90 days from the day of the accident to file a formal, legally precise notice of claim with the correct government agency.
90 days, that's nothing. I mean, if you're in a coma or just recovering from major reconstructive surgery, 3 months disappears in a blink. Why is the law set up to be so punishingly fast just because it's a city vehicle?
It actually traces back to the old legal concept of sovereign immunity, the idea that you couldn't sue the king.
Seriously?
Yeah. Today, obviously, you can sue the government, but because they are protecting massive municipal budgets funded by taxpayers, the law grants them special protections.
So they get a head start.
Pretty much. They require immediate notice so they can conduct their own investigations while the evidence is fresh. And if you miss that 90-day window, even by one single day, and even if you are literally paralyzed, the courts will almost certainly bar you from recovering a single dime.
That is terrifying. And it's exactly why you cannot assume you have plenty of time to handle this on your own. The source outlines several red flags that mean you need to bring in heavy legal firepower immediately.
Right. If liability is disputed by anyone, you need a lawyer.
If you have severe injuries like traumatic brain injuries, fractures, spinal fusions, you need a lawyer.
And especially if a commercial truck is involved.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Commercial trucking accidents are a completely different arena.
You are no longer just dealing with Geico or State Farm. You are dealing with specialized corporate defense firms.
Who have endless resources.
Endless. These companies have rapid response teams, investigators, and defense attorneys who are literally dispatched to the scene of a severe crash before the wreckage is even towed away.
Wait, they show up at the actual crash site?
Yes. Their job is to control the narrative, secure the electronic data recorders, and protect the corporation. If you wait weeks to hire an attorney, vital maintenance logs, driver hours of service records, and that black box data might legally or, you know, mysteriously be wiped or destroyed.
That is just incredible. So when we look at the source material detailing how these high stakes cases actually play out in the New York and Westchester courts, Norman Gershon's name keeps coming up in a very specific, fascinating context.
He's a very well-known figure in this space.
Yeah. He's been practicing since 1987, covering the 5 boroughs and Westchester from his White Plains office. But his reputation isn't just as a personal injury lawyer. The source says he is the trial lawyer that other attorneys turn to when a case gets too tough.
He's a lawyer's lawyer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But why does the legal industry operate that way? What makes a lawyer farm out their own case to a competitor?
Well, it reveals a somewhat hidden reality about the personal injury industry. A large percentage of practicing attorneys are essentially just settlement negotiators.
Okay. They build a volume-based practice. They take straightforward cases, gather the medical records, negotiate back and forth with the adjuster, and take the settlement. They rarely, if ever, see the inside of a courtroom.
Because trials are expensive.
Yeah.
Unpredictable. And they require a completely different skill set.
Exactly. And the insurance companies use very sophisticated data tracking. They know exactly which lawyers are willing to actually go to trial and which ones will eventually fold and take a lowball offer just to close the file.
Oh, so they call their bluff.
Every time. When a case involves complex liability, like a massive chain reaction crash or catastrophic injuries that require multi-million dollar compensation, the insurance company will simply refuse to settle fairly.
And when those volume lawyers realize they are outgunned by corporate defense, they bring in a trial-tested specialist.
Right. They call Norman Gersh because he represents a legitimate, proven threat to the insurance company's bottom line.
The trial firepower is the leverage. The insurance companies only pay out maximum value if they are genuinely terrified of what a jury will do to them.
Exactly.
And the firm's published case results in the source material demonstrate exactly how that leverage translates into actual mechanics in the courtroom.
The numbers are staggering.
We're looking at a $5.445 million verdict in a case called Mungo v. Treviseo. That involves cervical and lumbar fusions.
Proving causation for a spinal fusion in a multi-car accident is incredibly difficult.
Why is that?
Because the defense will always bring in their own paid medical experts to testify that the victim's spinal degeneration was pre-existing. They'll say it's just a natural result of aging, not caused by the crash.
So securing a $5 million verdict means the trial attorney systematically dismantled the defense's medical experts on cross-examination.
And successfully proved biomechanical causation to a jury. Yes.
There's another one here, a $5.08 million verdict in Young v. Bell for a sideswipe accident resulting in a cervical fusion.
Now, a sideswipe sounds so minor to the average person.
It really does, like just scraping some paint.
Right. But the lateral shearing force on the human neck during a high-speed sideswipe is catastrophic. To get a jury to understand that physics well enough to award $5 million requires absolute mastery of the evidence.
The list just continues. There's a $3.75 million verdict and a $3 million verdict, both for lumbar spine fusions resulting from motor vehicle accidents.
And a $2.5 million verdict secured in Westchester Supreme Court for an intersection accident.
Now, the source rightfully notes that past results don't guarantee future outcomes because, you know, every single crash has its own unique variables and medical history.
Of course.
But what those numbers undeniably establish is a track record. When the defense sees a lawyer with that history file a lawsuit, the calculus of the case changes entirely.
It absolutely does.
But, you know, I want to pivot away from the math for a second. Multi-million dollar verdicts are impressive data points on a spreadsheet. But when you are the person lying in a hospital bed, staring at the ceiling, wondering how you're going to pay your mortgage because you can't feel your legs and can't go back to work.
You don't need a calculator.
No, you need a human advocate.
The psychological toll of a catastrophic injury is immense. You are fighting for your physical recovery while simultaneously fighting this massive corporate entity that is actively trying to devalue your suffering.
Which is why the client testimonials and the source material stand out to me so much. They highlight a really rare duality.
They do.
One former client, our decisor, called Norman Gershon, one of the most stand-up, honest, and trustworthy men, but in the very same sentence described him as a beast in the courtroom.
That's quite the compliment.
And another client from Queens, SW, emphasized that he was a highly skilled attorney who genuinely cared about the people he represented.
That combination, empathy for the client and ruthlessness toward the opposition, that is the hallmark of elite representation.
Usually, if you are looking for a lawyer, you feel like you have to compromise.
Yes. Clients need an attorney who will actually return their phone calls, explain the complex legal strategy, understand the nuances of their physical pain.
But you also need someone who will go to war without hesitation when the insurance company acts in bad faith. You either hire the aggressive, terrifying shark who treats you like a case file number, or you hire the deeply compassionate, hand-holding lawyer who gets completely bullied and outmaneuvered by the corporate defense teams in court.
Having both is the ultimate advantage.
It really is. So if you or a loved one find yourself caught in one of these multi-jurisdictional nightmares, whether it's a pileup on the sawmill, a collision with a beeline bus, or a commercial truck accident in the boroughs, do not try to navigate the insurance algorithms and municipal trapdoors alone.
The source material provides a direct resource for this. You need to have the specific mechanics of your crash reviewed by an experienced, trial-tested team before you give a recorded statement or miss a filing deadline.
You can reach out for a free case evaluation directly through the law offices of Norman Gershon. The number provided in the source is 914-485-1444. Again, to get that evaluation, it's 914-485-1444.
They handle these complex cases in White Plains throughout Westchester County, Yonkers, the Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the entire New York metropolitan network.
Navigating a multi-vehicle crash is ultimately this high-stakes puzzle of physics, medicine, and law. It demands immediate preservation of evidence to counter the adrenaline.
It requires a precise understanding of algorithmic insurance tactics and unforgiving municipal deadlines.
And most importantly, it requires the elite trial-ready firepower to hold the right parties accountable and force the system to compensate you fairly. Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a thought for your very next commute.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Next time you are driving on the Cross County Parkway, or merging onto I-287. Look at the cars around you. Think about the massive, invisible legal web connecting every single one of those vehicles.
Wow, yeah.
Every time you tap your brakes or change lanes, you are instantly interacting with a floating matrix of commercial liability policies, overlapping municipal borders, and the physical kinetic energy of thousands of strangers.
It is a brilliant, terrifying system.
It really is. It makes you realize just how much trust we place in each other every single time we get behind the wheel.
We are all physically and legally tethered together out there at 65 miles an hour.
We really are. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. You are now armed with the mechanics of how this system actually works and the knowledge of exactly who to call if the worst ever happens on the road. Stay safe out there.